Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strong. And now, here's David.
Hello! Ooh, we got new equipment. Oh, cool! We fixed the mic. Hello! Charlottesville! It is Sunday! It is June the 9th! It is nice outside. A little humid, a little balmy. But it's been worse. And this is Homegrown, your show about local art here in the new and burgeoning Charlottesville, Central Virginia area. Let's be real. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I am David Von Strong, a.k.a. the Devious One, a.k.a. Nefarious Rucker, a.k.a. Negro Suave, a.k.a. Black Frodo. Little guy, hairy feet, trying to get through the darkness.
Trying to get through the darkness.
Hashtag Trump's America.
Speaking of Trump's America, may I just jump in? May I just jump in for a moment? Did you see the tweet from our resident in chief about Mars?
There are so many tweets.
No, I didn't.
Please indulge.
So there was a recent tweet, and usually I try to stay away from this above this, but it's great because the Guardian newspaper in England, I think our president finally broke them because their coverage.
Oh, you don't think the thousands of protesters on English soil didn't break the country already? The gigantic baby floating through the air. You didn't think
because the coverage of this tweet though, it's just like they just couldn't do it straight. Like they just pushed professionalism aside. I've just got to read this article. It's a short one.
Go.
But I've just got to read this article.
I like where we're going today.
The title: Trump attacks NASA and complains the moon is a part, quote, of Mars. All right, so this is the article. Followers of astronomy were in for a surprise on Friday when Donald Trump announced that the moon is part of Mars. In a tweet apparently commenting on his own administration's space policy, the president said, quote, "For all of the money we are spending, NASA should not be talking about going to the moon. We did that 50 years ago." He added, "They should be focused on the much bigger things we are doing, including Mars, of which the moon is a part. Defense and science."
All right, so does he mean like a part like in cahoots with, like they're like conspiring against him?
Because he does that.
Trump's Trump's declaration shocked many space enthusiasts because the moon has not traditionally been regarded as a part of Mars. The leading theory is that a collision between Earth and a planet-sized entity many years ago resulted in debris that eventually became the moon. On average, Mars is 140 million miles from the moon. NASA did not immediately respond to a question from The Guardian asking if the moon is a part of Mars.
Because how do you respond to something like that? What do you say?
Irrespective of whether the moon is a part of Mars, it isn't. It's
like they put that in the article.
Trump's announcement was doubly surprising given his previous enthusiasm for a moon trip. His criticism of NASA for talking about going to the moon came just 3 weeks after Trump championed the idea of a lunar visit. It just goes on.
All right. So all I got to say when I see and hear stuff like this is that this is a plot. Like, this is some type of distraction to pass some type of weird, like, deeper stuff that's going down in the governmental flow. Like, stay woke. Like, this is another one of them distractions so they can, like, pass something through and we don't recognize it. And then, oops, it's a law. And then half of these people that don't pass the paper bag test are in jail. You know, it's going to happen. You know, they're working on something. They're cooking something up. This is a hot mess right here. Dear God. What?
But as distractions go, wow.
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 I'm totally distracted.
If this is a distraction, then I think I respect him. Because how far are you willing to go to make yourself look like a complete and total idiot? to cover up some nefarious political scheme that you're doing. That's just like you could have attacked another country to distract. You could have gone on a racist rant to distract. There's so many things. If this is what you do, wow, dude, you are talk about commitment.
That's fair.
That's fair.
And with that,
I turn to the lovely trio of people in front of me: Jackie Patterson, Clarence Finn, and Gretchen York. They are appearing in Angels in America: Millennium Approaches. Millennials approach. I guess that's kind of true too.
We are approaching.
That's the third in the series.
There's no lights. The stage is just a glow of cell phone residue. Shannon Arts. It's going down to Shannon Arts in Stanton, June 14th through June. Let me move this 23rd. Awesome. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, like, we're theater nerds. It's like, it's okay. So are we. He's a bigger one than I am. So I'm nerd by proxy.
Fair enough.
But most of the time, idiot when it comes to theater, or at least knowledge of theater. I do my part. So, all right, let's just get into the nitty-gritty. Angels in America, I think a lot of people have... let's not talk about the HBO version of that. Let's just skate over that. But everybody knows of the piece it's a pretty popular show. Mm-hmm. Let's just get to the point. Is the Valley ready for Angels in America?
Being the Stanton expert, I guess that would be me. Yes, I think the Valley is finally ready for something like this. I think, honestly, we've been ready for a long time. I'm just applauding Shannon Arts for putting it forth finally. I never thought I'd see it in the Valley. I grew up in the Valley. I've been there since I was 13 years old. And I didn't think there was going to come a day where they actually would do this show. And when they announced it, I could not get over it and couldn't be more thankful.
Mm. Yeah.
And I guess you were just like, I gotta try out for this.
Oh, absolutely. Everybody and their brother knew I was trying out for this. I made it known that, yes, this was what's happening.
It's like, I'll Tonya Harden all you fools if I have to.
Oh,
I'm
a bean. Don't think I didn't threaten it.
So here in Homegrown, we like to talk about the process, not only, you know, from pre to post, getting into the space, meeting one another, discussing the subject matter, your director, what they wanted to accomplish and what they wanted to, what their vision was, ultimately. So just talk about the entire process of getting together, and making this play what it is now.
Sure. For me personally, this is a show I've wanted to do for probably over 10 years now. I'm from upstate New York originally, so...
What part?
Schenectady, near the capital, Albany. Yep.
You just like saying that, don't you?
Yes, I do. It makes me feel important. So I've known about the show for a long time, and, you know, I've never expected it to be done here, so it was a really nice step. And Prior Walter's been a dream role of mine personally, so to have that opportunity to play this role and do this show is fantastic.
Walter is your character by not giving too much away.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. He is a gay man during the 1980s who contracts AIDS, and it's in the show synopsis, but his lover leaves him, so he's pretty much left alone to die, and part of the play covers his struggle with dealing with AIDS, when at the time it was pretty much a death sentence. So it's a very intense journey for me going through that process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that I think John really wanted to communicate with this play is the sense of...
And is John your director?
John Fregosi, yes, the director. Mm-hmm.
The hell are you, John? No excuses. You need to be on the press junket like these people are. All right, go ahead. I apologize.
John wanted to really communicate the sense of theatrical magic that infuses this world, because while it's about Prior Walter, who is coping with his disease and his loneliness, and the sort of circle of characters that surround him that are also coping with their own world, falling apart, the sort of infusion of the mystical into this world is like really, I mean, it sort of ruptures. It's a membrane breaking, Tony Kushner says in his notes to the production. And John Fregosi has made this incredible immersive theatrical experience. This show, this is also in the play notes, Tony Kushner says works best when the magic is fully realized, but also fully theatrical. So it's, and you have to invest in every single moment of magic. And John has really done that.
And so Tony Kushner is the original playwright of Angels in America.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also wrote a great Lincoln script.
Yeah.
Just want to say
it's true.
It's true. The guy's a man. And you just already expressed like your abject love.
Yeah, this has been a dream of mine since it came out. So as Clarence said, it was about 10 years ago for him. It was been about 20 for me. And playing Harper has been a dream role of mine since then. So I feel very fortunate to be cast.
So can we go into that? Why? Why has this play captured your imagination so much? Why have you wanted to play these roles and do this play so much?
For me, it's a scope of the play itself. It is epic in a way you don't expect, especially not that you expect from a straight show, as opposed to a musical. Mm-hmm. And the complexities of the characters. They all go through their own journeys of their worlds falling apart and how they put it back together. So it's that part of the realism of it married with the more mystical part of it.
So many of these characters also, it's almost, I don't know, I hesitate to say Shakespearean, but they speak their inner truth. Harper particularly has these long, beautiful monologues where she's trying to come to terms with her experience. And so that idea of being able to not to speak these really beautiful words. I get to play the angel, which has also been a dream role of mine. And the angel has this transcendent poetry. It's written in verse, and to be able to go on stage and say these really big words about these big cosmic truths, or at least cosmic questions that we're trying to figure out is a dream come true.
And for me, I'm very touched by how human the play is. The emotions are raw. The moments are genuine, and it doesn't shy away from, you know, how sick some of the AIDS patients were. My character develops lesions. He develops pneumonia. You know, it does not shy away from how hard it was for these people diagnosed with this horrible disease in a time where no one really knew how to treat them. You know, doctors were afraid to touch these people. My character speaks about how his doctors won't touch him without gloves on, without a mask. So for me, it baffled me how afraid these people were to have any contact with these people. And I've, throughout this process, I've seen so many documentaries, because I was born in the late 80s, so I was very young when a lot of this was going on. So just to see how scary of a time it was and to see how sick these people were and no one knew what to do for them. So I'm just touched by these people who, you know, some of them met such horrible ends alone because so many people were afraid.
And to put the point on it, no one knew what to do.
Yeah.
Following on,
yeah,
few people wanting to do.
Yeah.
Really. I've said, I will continue to say that if there is any judgment, if there's any just judgment in history, we as a country are really going to have to pay in the eyes of history for how we completely ignored and neglected this horrible
thing. Yeah.
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 And I think part of the play's point is, I mean, to show these terrible, awful things that the body is going through, but to deal with it and to face it head on. The characters who are dealing with, who are unafraid to sort of get in the muck with bodies or with the sort of the difficulties and I just want to say, the dirtiness of living, those are the people who are our heroes and who we try and who follow. You know, love isn't easy, right? And just like disease.
Being yourself isn't easy. So yeah. I feel like it's an identity play as well, mm-hmm. as not being afraid to be who you are, mm-hmm. and the consequences of who that affects.
Yeah. And just so many stories struck me about, you know, I saw this, I was watching a short documentary today about this young man who died during the time from AIDS. And after the emergency personnel dropped him off at the hospital, they burned the ambulance. And it was such a, yeah, it was, God, yeah.
Yeah, I was a short story. I was a paralegal in the early 90s. And I remember some guy coming into to our law office and say, so I'm a painter. We're going to paint this apartment, and the guy who lived in the apartment just died of AIDS, and I want to know if they can force me to actually be in the apartment to paint it.
Wow.
And I was like, dude, and okay, I said, okay, legal issues aside,
yeah.
you're not, let me tell you about how this gets contracted. You're not in any danger. No.
Right.
Yeah.
And wow.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like there was a lot of like misnomers and a lot of misunderstandings during that entire like late 80s, early 90s period. I was there for all of like the PSAs and all of the videos and like not to use the toilet seat and all that dumb stuff. But let's talk about more happier things. When we come back from this commercial, we gotta pay a few bills, but thank you so much to probably half the cast of Angels in America from Chin and Arts sitting here in Homegrown. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Hi, this is Priyanka Shetty, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
18 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. All right, Jackie Patterson, Clarence Finn, Gretchen York are in the house today. Woo! Talking about Angels in America. Millennium approaches. Shannon Arts is throwing it down. You guys have all in the past few minutes just really talked about how important this show is to you all, and also to that the story needs to be told.
Yes, sir.
And I'm just hoping that Shannon Arts takes, you know, all this feedback and assessment that you're giving and uses it to embrace more plays with deeper subject matter. Because, I mean, I get it. Everybody loves the big bombastic musical, and everybody loves, you know, a nice song that they can go home and hum to in their car. But I think the stories that need to be told and that theater provides the vehicle for is much more important and impactful to our culture and to our society. I think we as actors also need to harbor some type of responsibility in the characters that we possess and the people that we portray. So do you think that Shannon Arts is going to like keep at this?
I do believe they will. They've always been the one part of the Valley that will push a little bit more. And as you all know, we come from a conservative area.
What?
Yeah, I know.
What? Shenandoah Valley is conservative? I did not know. Let me Google something real quick.
And so it is important to tell these stories and show that they're important, that everybody, no matter where they're from, what they believe, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. They're very human stories. And we're very happy. We just got the new center downtown, the
LGBTQ center?
Yes. Which is a big deal for Stanton, is to acknowledge, we have many gay, lesbian, trans, non-binary people in our society right
and
now.
And we offer a safe space for them to be in and flourish.
And I think this play is especially important now, mimicking the politics at the time, and the politics that are happening now are kind of parallel to what's to each other, unfortunately.
Yeah. This play is about what do you do when your world falls apart.
Yeah.
And I think it feels like
the world is falling apart every single day.
And in politics, religion, love, but like, what do you do?
We can always go to the moon around Mars.
Because they're together. Yeah. There's a bridge. Yeah. It's like the... Yeah,
but we say it's human, and it's very human for us now to have this. What do? I go to the theater and I perform in plays. To your point about actors bearing responsibility, and I think audiences will come and appreciate hearing, you know, these characters' stories about what you do when the world feels like it's falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And another thing I love about this play, yes, the serious content and the emotional content, but people forget it's also a very funny play. There's some, you know, really, truly comical moments in this play. Part of my character's defense against the disease is trying to keep up, because he has a strong sense of humor, and he tries not to lose that, because that's the only thing he has left when he's alone is a sense of humor. If he loses that, he's got nothing.
Right.
So, you know, there's some generally funny, sweet moments in this play that I feel like add to the human quality of it.
Any challenges you've encountered trying to play these roles?
Physically, for me, I spend a lot of time in bed, and in my usual category of characters I've played, I'm usually the clown. I'm usually this bombastic guy who likes to move around. That's been the majority of my experience is playing clowns. So to have this role where I'm stationary for most of the play and unable to use my body the way I'm used to on stage, it's been a struggle for me personally. Mm.
Similarly, the thing that is described, or the angel is described as having a beautiful voice, and I have always been a little bit self-conscious about my voice, and basically my voice is doing a lot of the work in this role, and I, one of the reasons I wanted to do this play was something in every scene I was in scared me. And it's just such a beautiful opportunity to develop those skills. So how do I create that power, and beauty, like a perfectly taut string, you know, and it was a wonderful opportunity to do that, but it's been a challenge.
I think things like this are always scary. When we push the envelope a little bit more, especially for Stanton, because we want to do it justice, and I feel like a lot of pressure on myself to make sure I do this character justice, that I'm performing it in a way that really speaks to people. So I have that, and conversely to what Clarence says, I have a very physical role in the way it's directed in this show, so I'm not used to being all over the place, spun around and jumping on things, and it's interesting. Come see it.
Yeah, as an actor, I think the hardest thing to do is plan and just stay there. It's so hard. You get on the stage to move, and it's something I've had to just physically train myself to do.
Jackie does a lot of moving, and the world of the play, the way that it's staged, does a lot of moving as well. This is a sort of like living, breathing set, and it's beautiful and astounding, and the theatrical effects will just blow your mind. So I think that John Fregosi, the director, has done such a beautiful job of helping us do that movement by creating a world that is shifting as the characters' lives and relationships are also shifting.
And that's a really short run, 14th through the 23rd. That's only like, that's 9 days.
That's usually the kind of runs that we do in the Valley. We don't have the big live arts runs, although I would love to.
You say that now.
I've been in a live arts show. I remember. But it is a relatively short run. However, it's a long run for a straight show over there. Yeah. So we're very fortunate to have that time.
Right on.
And there'll be part two next year. So living, breathing set will have a second life.
Yeah. Okay. So you got to catch the first part to get the second part. Because if you see the second part, then you're just going to be all messed up. So that's how they get you.
Yes, all these people coming in just for the second part were like, AIDS? What is this AIDS thing they're talking about? I feel like I missed something. What?
They just threw me in the middle of it. I didn't understand anything. It's ridiculous.
I like how all of a sudden things got very Jewish there.
Right, doing that. Yeah, yeah.
It's
Schenectady.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, for Kosi, like, it is not an uncommon thing for there to be for him to really lean into the theatricality, to the stagecraft, in his pieces, in his works, right?
That's very true. And I think this is sort of a piece de resistance. He said one of the reasons he wanted to do this play was because it was something he couldn't do at any other kind of theater. He needed a big indoor space to really create this magic. And he's taken all of the resources of Shannon Arts and done as much with it as possible.
Yeah, the set is a character just as much as the characters in the play are. Yeah.
It's both indoor and outdoor. It's a city. It's this just sort of constantly
Cowboy Stadium?
Shifting thing.
Does the roof come off?
Yeah. You know, the walls have to blow apart. Like, all sorts of, you know, yeah.
It's like, holy jeez.
Yeah, this play is everything that makes theater great, from the acting to the connection between the cast and to the into the set. Everything is what makes theater great, and that's why I love doing the show.
How long did it take? Like, month-wise, when did y'all start rehearsing?
We started rehearsal about, I think, only about 2 months ago.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It shortened and condensed. However, John Fregosi has been working on this for quite a while, much more than we'd have.
Well, it sounds like you guys have devoted a lot of your time and attention and passion to it.
Yes.
And it sounds like it's going to be a monster of a show. And that just gives me an excuse to see this theater in Stanton. Because I haven't yet.
Oh, please come.
Maybe I have, but I just didn't realize that I was there. You ever do that?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So thank you so much for coming
back.
Thank you. I hope you come back for the second part.
Yeah.
And you blow that one up.
We would love that.
Hype it up. All right, cool. So we are going to go to artistic events, because that's what we do at Homegrown. We blow up your artistic events, the local musicians and artists around here. So here are just some of the artistic events happening this week, currently running. Check out these exhibits from these local artists. Radio La Aria and Reef are Oceans Living. Abstractions by Tina Curtis at Second Street Gallery. Works by Aaron Marie O'Keefe, Amanda Wagstaff, and Mary Lamb at New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Cry of the Cicada! Photographs by Bill Mousy at Chroma Projects. The second group show. That was the cry.
Is that your cicada cry? Is that what that was?
Cicada cry. It was very sad and longing for somebody to hold. The second group show by the Feminist Union of Seville Creatives, worked by photographer Scott F. Smith, and the final works from 2018 to 2019 incubator resident artists, all at McGuffey Arts Center. Last chance.
What?
Okay. The American Shakespeare Center, current traveling troupe, returns from the Hand of Time tour to the Blackfriars Theater in Stanton to perform the Antigone. They're going to perform the Antigone by Sophocles. It's going to be amazing. 16 winners were The Bear's Tale by Mary Elizabeth Hamilton and The Comedy of Errors and The Winner's Tale by Shakespeare. Today, UVA Fralin Art Museum docent and former guest June Hines guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fralin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour at 11 a.m. today. June 15th, Big Blue Door Improv at the Bridge PAI. And for your music options this week...
Today, Patrick and Aaron Owell and friends at Almoral Cider Works at 2:30 p.m. Also, Two Wishes Trio at the Glasshouse Winery at 3 p.m. Today and tomorrow, starting today and going to June 16th, the Shenandoah Valley Bach Festival.
Uh-oh.
And we had our man on, he was talking about it.
Yeah.
The Shenandoah Valley Bach Festival.
All Shenandoah Valley show today.
Go to the website svbachfestival.org for event venues, performance schedules, times, and tickets. You don't know how big and huge this thing. And once you go, you will never go Bach.
Oh my God.
Oh, God. Really? Tonight, behind the music, behind the music with Nan Lewis, Orion, and Asher. Nan McMillan, Lewis Smith, Orion Farouk, and Asher McLaughlin talk about inspirations for their songs at the Front Porch Roots Music School at 7 p.m. Tomorrow, the Brian Caputo Jazz Trio at Oakhurst Inn, June 11th. Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's, June 12th. The UVA McIntyre Department of Music and the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative present another installment of their monthly telemetry experimental music series.
Yo.
This month, they feature Space Saver, Kitty Cooper and North Carolina's Ghost Trees. June 12th, taking inspiration from modern and classic styles of African-American music, Richmond's Weekend Plans plays Rapture.
Okay.
On June 13th, also, Susan Harlow at Stinson Vineyards, Eli Cook at Dirty Nelly's, The Weed Eaters, and then Sisters and Brothers at the Whiskey Jar. June 14th to 15th, the Jefferson School African-American Heritage Center celebrates June 19th, 1865, when the Union Army made their final announcement of emancipation of African-Americans in a Confederate state. They will celebrate with speakers, singers, and dancers.
Yeah.
June 14th, Kendall Street Company plays Fridays After 5 at the Sprint Pavilion.
Okay.
Adar does a stripped-down set with her keyboardist Nick Birkin at Glasshouse Winery. Jim Wave at the Chisholm Vineyard and Adventure Farm. And catch aspiring musicians learning the difficult art of playing in a band at Stacy's Music Highway to Rock Drum Recital at the Ixart Park. I think we should call that the Stacy's Music Highway to Rock Drum Recital at the Ixart Park. June 14th, Madly Backwards plays Holly's Diner. June 15th, Lua Project. What up, Lua? Lua Project, Elmar Ciderworks, Willie D at the Grace Estate Winery, Dusty Hedgehog at Wayland's Crossing, and the Robert Jospe Express Trio at the Batesville Market every Sunday. It's Travis Elliott at Rapture. Every Monday, the Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Roots Music School. And Seafoot.
Seafoot.
Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music, weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Tango Music with Miles Pierce and Manny Metcalf at The Bebedero. Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar, Onyx Manor at Rapture, and the Songwriter Night at The Local. Every Tuesday, Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Salas at The Bebedero. The Ragged Mountain String Band at the Whiskey Jar, Lewis Smith and Friends at Fellini's, Traditional Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. What up, Mike and Jeff? Every Wednesday and Thursday, Josh Mayo's Open Mic Night at 1221 Market Street, and Bachata Fusion at the Rabbit Hole. Every Thursday, Humberto Salas and Vincent Zorn do the Gypsy Rumba at the Bebedero, and every Thursday...
Oh, snap.
John Durth! With the John Durth Quintet and Miller, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Durth. And those are just some of the wonderful artistic events in our wonderful artistic community.
We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown.
Drop!
Hey, this is Michael Clem. You were listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
A lot of local people.
I know, like, almost
33 minutes past the hour. There's so many people here.
Jim Wave used to pick up, like, boxes from Blue Light Restaurant when I worked down there. Jim Wave had this box hustle where he would do, like, the recycling and get, like, paid for bringing the boxes somewhere.
What?
Yeah, yeah, it's great.
That's what's up. Hey, man, you got to have your hustle, you know, at some point. DJ Vove in the house doing Hip Hop History, Volume 1 at Holly's Diner on June 15th. Thank you so much for coming in to enjoy it.
No problem. No problem.
No. I just wanted to premise, I didn't want to be offensive when I walk by you. I just like to have organic conversations when we walk into the room.
Of course.
Someone was like, did you talk to the people? I was like, no, I didn't talk to the people because I'm going to talk to the people right now.
Yeah.
That's what I do. It's what we do at Homegrown.
Yeah.
I get to know you. You get to know me.
It's great.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's his extensive improv background.
Exactly. First time on Homegrown.
First time here. Yeah, not the first time in the studio. Nice studio. First time on y'all's show.
Right?
So thank you for having me.
I
really appreciate it.
Yeah, and thank you for doing it. All right, so let's get down to the nitty-gritty. It's an all-vinyl, pre-2000s hip-hop show.
That's right. You know, vinyl is definitely having a resurgence. It's becoming more popular. For me, it never left. As a DJ, I never made the jump to digital technology. I've always been an analog guy, and it's just kind of what I do, you know. And I think now more than ever, it's important as hip hop's moving along that we talk about the history of hip hop. A lot of great music getting lost in the mix nowadays, and you know, we just kind of, you know, I guess because I'm an old head now, we're just kind of going to come out and celebrate it. You know, we're going to play something different. We're going to give the people a little something they haven't heard before.
And I know you're a hip-hop head because you use the term old head, so that automatically defines you in a certain period. I'm guessing like 85 to 95. That's kind of where I got my hip-hop history from.
A lot of time, you know, hip-hop is a genre that really kind of defines locales, places, and time. And we're just kind of going to celebrate that. And a lot of people never seen a real vinyl DJ. A lot of DJs never seen a real vinyl DJ. So, you know, we're just going to come out. It's what I do. We're going to celebrate it. Holly's, it's free for the community. You know, it doesn't cost nothing. You come out, patronize the business, you know, tip your bartender well, and have a good time.
So now, elaborate on that. So is it just a conscious decision, like, I'm just not going to do digital, or it's just like, I just don't want to learn new technology?
No, that's fair. I spend a lot of time on new technology. For me, digital music, no matter even if it's the best sample rate there is, it's still sampled. There's still blank spaces in the music that you can't hear, but your subconscious picks up on. When you drop the needle onto that record, that magnet is picking it up and it never stops. Sure, there's crackles and pops. And
but that's the sound that people kind of did when they go for
your phone. Your body responds differently to a signal that is unbroken. It feels different. It connects more. And I prefer that. There's also a big resurgence going back to analog. People don't like the tinny kind of soulless sound of digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And really, I think when you look at music and you look at bringing people together to share music, it's really all about soul and things that are tangible. I like the tangibility of it. I'm touching it. I'm playing it. You can hold it in your hand. Mm-hmm. You'll have it forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, my record collection is an archive of hip hop. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to go out and share that with people.
I remember having vinyl and like opening it up and being able to look through it. I mean, the same thing with like even CDs, you know, like looking at the art display while you're listening to the jams, like you don't get that. You can't scroll through that in a phone. You can't scroll through art design in a phone. Like, I just think a lot of the experience of music is lost when, with digital. And I like digital. It's fine because I love music, but you're right.
It's great for the car. You know, you can have everything at the tip of your fingers.
Yeah.
But there's just something, for me at least, there's something more tangible about the record, about the format.
Mm-hmm.
The sound, the bass response, you know, the way the mixing happens, it's simple. It's right in front of your eyes. We can't see the laptop when the DJ's on Serato. Like, we don't know what's going on. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know what was pre-programmed ahead of time. Like, when you're a vinyl DJ, like, you're out. It's almost like being an actor or a performer in another way. There's no magic behind the curtain. You know, there's no smoke and mirrors. Like, you're out there, you see what's going on, you can hear it through your ears and also watch it in person. And it's just more tangible. For me, it's really kind of just grasped me, and I never left it. You know?
Yeah.
I'm going to stop by the record store after I leave here.
Yeah. And it's like being the gymnast, you know, flexing your skills and doing different stuff that you've probably seen nobody else do.
Exactly. Yeah, we want to celebrate hip hop. We want to play all those old jams that you forgot about from way back in the day.
Yeah. Nobody know about Jeru the Dramaja anymore.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. They're gonna hear some of him on Saturday. So all that old stuff.
Oh my God, that sounds just great. Are we commercial yet? Or
no.
Okay, cool. We're gonna keep going. All right. go.
So it's interesting that you mentioned the difference between seeing a vinyl DJ and seeing somebody with the laptop. I hadn't thought about that before, but yeah, I'm totally down with it. There is much more of a performative aspect of it. It's just like it's interesting to see. It's engaging to see someone doing the work.
Yeah, yeah. It just translates different. And it's something that I think as time goes on, as records are making a resurgence, like, we should celebrate it. It's just a good time.
When you're doing vinyl and you're DJing, do you think that you can feel the difference in terms of how the crowd responds to the music and how the crowd responds to what you're doing as opposed
to... I think it's just almost whenever your body tells you, you know? It just kind of hits you a little different in the chest. You know, the bass response is a little deeper. The snare's a little warmer. Music is mixed different on vinyl, you know? I've got some vinyls you can't get on an MP3. So it's also the exclusivity of it. And it's just, you know, it's just a little something different. People are used to seeing the same thing nowadays. We're just trying to do a little something different for them, mm-hmm. kind of expand the horizon a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about warmth. In fact, it's great to hear you talk about the warmth of music because my first experience with a CD, I had a friend of mine in high school. Because, you know, I'm that old. I had a friend of mine in high school. He's like, have you heard CDs yet? I'm like, no.
What was the first CD? Everybody remembers the first CD they bought. What was the first one you ever bought?
It was... I can't remember the first one. Oh, yeah, no, I do remember the first one I ever bought. The first CD I ever bought was songs inspired by the movie Batman by Prince.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Right. Which is, you know, that's a fine piece of work to have on CD.
Oh, yeah. CD came in the long box, right? Back when it was in the tall box. The plastic joint around the outside. Yeah.
But I remember my friend, he said, you've got to come over to my house and hear CDs. And he said, and he had Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
That was one. Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, this should be the first CD that you get.
Well, it was, because when you can only get like 5 CDs, that's what Sony chose, you know, to go in the stack. So it was definitely an option.
Right, right. And he played, and he said, this is like, you've got to hear this. Like, for his example, and for my introduction to what digital sounded like, he played Time.
Okay.
With those bells and those alarms coming off. Yeah. And I remember it was like falling glass.
Wonderfully
mixed.
It was
so tinny, and it was so like it was shocking how crisp it was. But at the same time, I remember thinking, it feels kind of cold.
Well, is that crispness necessarily desirable? And that's what I always say. You know, recently we did some shows. We did the Nine Pillars Fest. We had some people come from out of town, and a lot of these artists are really stout activists about the purity of music and analog and the hip hop form. And it kind of sparked something in me as well that I always felt, but I was just like, you know, I was like, it's okay to feel that way. And it's okay to, you know, kind of take a stand against it.
Mm-hmm.
Just really, As time goes by, you know, technology is great and all, but I'll always have my record collection. And you could spin a record by hand with no electricity and still put your ear to it and still hear it if there's a stylus playing on it. So, you know, it's thinking about music and thinking about all of our musical memories, a lifetime of music that we all have inside of our minds, you know, just kind of cataloging that in a tangible form that I can always access. And I like going out and playing it for people. You know, I like playing out. So it's going to be a good time, a good party.
All right. Well, I want to talk more about exclusivity when in vinyl when we get back with DJ Bove. Because, yeah, I have some interesting questions. Or at least one interesting question that might lead into 5 interesting questions. DJ Bove, this is Homegrown. Drop!
This is Eli Raybon, music's mad scientist, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
5 minutes past the hour. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. All right. Exclusivity. All right. Now, because there's a difference in the vinyl collector that really, like you talk about, that cares about the purity of sound.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking.
DJ Bove. Of course, everybody knows DJ Bove.
That's right.
He was at the Nine Pillars hip-hop show. So, you know, we're talking about Hip-Hop History Volume 1. All vinyl, pre-2000 hip-hop show. Holly's Diner, June 15th. Sorry, I got carried away. I just had to ask a question before I forgot it. All right, exclusivity. There's a difference between the avid vinyl collector that appreciates the sound, that appreciates the ability to manipulate the sound, and they appreciates just the warmth of it. And then there's also the vinyl collector that is just a pretentious hipster bastard that I loathe.
Yeah, you're, you know.
And that just wants it because nobody else can get it, and will get it because of the fact that, oh, well, I have something that few people have, and that makes me cooler than you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that sucks.
Is he sharing that music with anybody? Or are they just, you know, there is some, the resurgence of records does come with a cost, and there is a bit of a hipster vibe around it. But I'm into it, because I've noticed records popping up in places that you wouldn't even imagine.
They're more available to you.
You can go to Barnes & Noble, I guess, now. They have,
there's a Barnes & Noble still?
Yeah, apparently. you can you know, you can get a Share record or something like that. But
right,
it's
right.
Just like, I like the fact that they're becoming more normalized. Record Store Day, this last past Record Store Day, was the best record sales since 1976 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's definitely coming back. And that's going to come with, you know, that hipster, pretentious exclusivity, but you know, it's all to each their own. Like, mm-hmm. I just think it's great that the format's coming back.
Yeah, it's great for you.
I like the manipulation. Something about records always draw me to it. As a musician, and as a you know, everybody loves music. Mm-hmm. Some people depend on music more than others, but I think we can agree that everybody loves music.
All right,
and it was just fascinating to me. I think I've past the, you know, standard record collector right now, where I'm pretty much, you know, I'm looking for vinyl all the time. I'm obsessed by it. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just a good feeling.
Right. What's, what would you say is like your Mickey Mantle of vinyl? Like the one you just, when you just got.
I got a few. Oh, so you.
Like
you,
that Pulp Fiction.
So you mentioned, you mentioned J.Ru, you can't really find his stuff on, like, you know, kind of the stuff that I'm bringing out for Hollies is kind of like the Unobtainium, the old Gangstar, the J.Ru,
nice.
The No ID,
nice.
The, you know, EC Illa, the Das FX, you know,
nice.
I got every EPMD record, you know.
Nice.
It's like people nowadays, you want to be a DJ, you don't know who Kool Herc is. You want to be a rapper, you got, sure. Nobody knows who KRS-One is.
Slap yourself.
You know, so it's like we're basically just going to settle in and, you know, go through the gamut.
Mm-hmm.
We'll play all these old classic, you know, and I was thinking about it the other day when I was thinking about, you know, doing some shows and doing something for the community. And I was like, you know, like, I got a lot of Unobtainium in my stacks. And and when you talk about the exclusivity
man
of that.
Man said Unobtainium.
Because it's like you couldn't find it if you tried, you know?
Facts.
And it's like, that's the kind of stuff where you go out and you play it and people realize, like, wow, there's like so much more out there.
Mm.
I don't need to listen to the same stuff over and over again. Like we can open our minds a little bit.
What do you say to the new hip hop generation, to people like Lil Yachty that come out and say, I don't care about Biggie and I don't care about Tupac and I don't care about the hip hop that came before? Because punk was kind of like that too. Like the Sex Pistols came out and said,
him.
Screw the past.
You know,
we're doing our own thing.
I like music and I respect all artists. I can choose not to listen to it.
Yeah.
Because, you as sure as the moon revolves around Mars, there's going to be, you know, plenty of artists out there making music. But I think people should stick to it. I think music is an individual thing, and people should at utmost be themselves when they're performing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really listen to a lot of modern music per se. You know, because I'm kind of stuck in the what I would consider the golden era.
Trapped in the 90s?
Trapped in the 80s and 90s. I do a lot of 70s. I do a lot of 60s soul. But it's just where I gravitate to.
Mm-hmm.
I think new artists should keep at it. But I mean, I would advise everyone to just study up, you know. Knowledge is power. And the more you know about your craft and the more you know about the history of your craft, the more you know about yourself.
And I think the more that you can do with that craft from beginning to end. Anything to add, Clinton? All right. Usually Clinton's all over the thing. But,
stay out of your way.
I
stay out of your way.
So you would recommend this show for
anybody that likes to come out and have a good time. Hollies is a great location,
well,
you know,
Hollies
corner market
location.
And need. We got a free show going on here, so it's not going to put you out of pocket, you know, to come in the door and scope it out. Anyone who would consider themselves an old head, a hip-hop head, anyone that wants to hear that boom-bap slap, you know, anyone that wants to hear somebody just play some old joints and scratch all night long, you know.
Is that Friday?
It's Saturday the 15th from 10 to 2. And I'd advise everybody to come out and check it out, see something a little different. You know, I'm a boom bap addict. I love that slap. I love that snare. I love the scratch. Mm-hmm. It's never going to change, and it's just going to, you know, go out and do it. Put some clock in and put some work in. Mm.
So how did this come to be? Did you go to Holly's? Did Holly's come to you? Is this all you? Did you say, I'm going to do this?
Oh, no. I've known Jayon for a while, and, you know, I played a couple, performed a couple times at his spot down at Ix. And he just approached me. It's basically all on Jayon, and I got to give him some props. But I love Holly's.
Is he doing the booking at Holly's now?
I think he's got something to do with it.
Okay.
You know, it was real.
No, because I know he's not doing
this
anymore.
This was really loosely.
Are we saying too much personal stuff? We're talking about me.
This was loosely put together. You know, and I thought about it in about 5 minutes. I was like, man, I just want to do like a hip hop history night. You know, mm-hmm. I want to get the heads out. Basically, you know, inspired by all the great people I met doing Nine Pillars and all my colleagues. It's kind of like who I am.
Shout out to Nine Pillars.
Yeah, it's kind of like my thing. I'm not a modern guy. I'm an old school dude, and it's going to be, you know, just me kind of clocking in and doing my thing with a bunch of great music, scratching and cutting and juggling. Anyone who likes battle DJing, come out, check it out. Ooh.
It seems like it is part of that you're swimming in sort of the zeitgeist of hip hop right now, because it's been 40 years, right?
It's been 40 years. It's a, you know, valid form. You know, my friend A.D. Carson is a hip hop professor at UVA. We've got one. It's now a valid art form and should be cataloged and should be chronicled.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I'm thinking, because I'm thinking that a lot of people are feeling that, because I'm encountering a lot of that. Like, we're seeing hip hop documentaries mm-hmm. yeah. coming out. We're seeing like movies. I mean, when they did a movie about N.W.A., it was like, whoa! Yeah.
Killed. You know,
killed.
I mean,
yeah.
they've done movies about rappers before, but it hasn't killed like to this degree. But I do want to touch on, like, because Wake Up Call is previously recorded, so we can just kind of like go into this, right? All right, cool. Wake Up Call next. Great programming on 94.7 WPVC. Anyway, but let's talk about the maturation of hip hop, because in its 40 years, we've seen it evolve into this new thing. And I think like pre-2000s, like there was a lot of like homophobia, there was a lot of misogyny, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't play your record.
Well, actually, I don't play records that speak on homophobia and misogyny, and I choose not
to. Talk about that.
I choose not to.
Do you do that? How do you go through the crates?
So back in the day, you would get a single, and the single, you would get the street, you would get the radio, and then you'd also get the acapella, and the radio is edited. So, you know, barring any sort of broad message of negative impact, you know, of course I won't play something like that, but it's mostly clean versions you'll get.
Okay.
And I also choose, you know, artists mostly that I listen to use hip hop as a form of activism to raise the community, to bring awareness to people who would normally not have awareness. And you know, it's always been a positive thing, and you can use it as such. And I choose, you know, as a DJ, you have the ultimate choice. You're driving the bus. And I don't play stuff that has negative messages, especially like that, you know, demeaning women or, talking about misogyny, homophobia, not going to happen in my sense.
I appreciate that, and I don't know. I think clean edits kind of like sterilize a certain like vision and a certain like aspect of what the artist wants to achieve.
Yeah, but when what the artist wants to achieve is something noxious.
True.
I mean, what do you do with that?
But honestly, in my collection, you're really not going to get that much, because as a DJ, you know, you get to choose. You get to choose what you put in your crates. And,
this is true.
You know, I know every one of those records front and back. And I feel like if you're going to, you know, steward people's appreciation of an art form, it's your job to make sure that art form is not, you know, it's not necessarily sterilized, but you don't have to outwardly be hurtful or,
word,
you know,
no,
brutal.
Yeah,
in
and I'm not saying
play.
That you should put out music like that. I actually appreciate the diligence that you took to create a playlist that does that because that's hard to do.
Well, speaking of diligence, you know, you're never going to hear Jay Dilla say anything negative about any other human beings. You know, you're never going to hear Pete Rock put out a hate track.
You know,
It's just not kind of how that art form was about. And, and that's another thing that's always drawn me to
it. There was one. Yeah. De La Soul.
Oh, a lot of De La. You're going to be hearing a lot of De La on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah, Far Side. Like, a lot of music that just wasn't, like, harsh to people.
Positive.
Yeah.
Positive message.
Yes. No positive K?
That
song is whack, but it was hot in the summer.
Yeah, but talking about unobtainium, there are some certain things that you just cannot find on wax anymore. There's, like, some holy grails that I'm still looking for. And, you know, in the cosmic game of life, they'll find me when it's time. I'll walk into a garage sale or, you know, Goodwill or something, and it'll pop up on me. You know, they'll find you.
So how much of your time do you spend looking for new vinyl?
Not very much, but it's just kind of like wherever I go, I'm always got my eyes open, you know? And they find
eyes
you.
Eyes open for what? I mean, you were just talking about, so is it like, looking for the garage sales?
Back in the day, so how long have you been in Charlottesville? You been around a while?
I've been here for more than 25 years.
So let's talk about back when there was like a Plan 9 on the corner.
Oh, Plan 9.
Back when there was like a Plan 9 right over here.
Yep.
Back when like half the store was records. You know, I would spend a lot of time going down there and picking up records.
Crossroads.
It's not the same buying it. You know, you can go online, you can buy it online, but every record I bought online come warped because it's been shipped in the mail. So it's, you know, got a knot in it or something. Would, you know, still play, but it's not ideal.
Right.
Like I said, I'm gonna pop on over to Plan 9 after I'm done here, do a little scope. And I've seen Klee walk in the studio right when we was waiting, you know.
All right, so. we got 2 minutes, but farthest you've ever 1 minute. Farthest you've ever driven for a piece of vinyl.
I go to Richmond or something. I don't do massive trips.
I want you to like talk about like a journey or something.
Possibly,
I get it.
Possibly one day, but you know, I got a job. I got to work. So
no, I get that. I just wanted to know the dedication. You know what I'm saying? Nah, DJ Bove, it sounds really hot.
Yeah,
I actually
work,
think
work.
I'm
yeah, y'all come out. Holly's Deli.
I think it's going to be lit.
Saturday
all
night.
All vinyl pre-2000 hip hop show, Holly's Diner, Hip Hop History Volume 1 going down June 15th. That means there's going to be Volume 2 and Volume 3 and Volume 4. Bah, 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 bah.
Could be. So thank you guys for having me.
Much.
It's a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. Leslie, if you're out there, I love you. I love you, Clinton. Stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call. 94.7 WPVC. Want to thank DJ Bove, Jackie Patterson, Clarence Finn, Gretchen York, Angels of America. Sounds dope. I might check that out, too. That theater sounds dope. Everything sounds dope. I don't know. For all of these people, all of these dope people. But everything sounds lit. I got to check it out. All right, much love. We got to get out of here. Peace.
It's been Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art. Our opening music by Spit It Out, Inc. Our event music by Positive Collective. This is KRS-One. Any complaints, directed to our fine lisping law firm, Tochterman Overman, Munson & Burke. Legal services that wrap around you like a thong. Keep your dial here on 94.7. See you next week.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.